Ladies and gentlemen, before I turn the good air over to the not-so-tender mercies of our fine-feathered friends, the crow and the quail, I think it only fair that you should know something about these two very rare birds. Your full name, please.
Oliver Quail.
Age?
22 months old, come next St. Swithin's Day.
Come, Mr. Quail. You're 30 if you're a day. Occupation?
Private detective, room 202, Brown Building, San Francisco.
What are your hobbies, Mr. Quail?
Ladies and horses. With speed, a prime requisite.
What are your pet aversions?
Jonathan Crow, any kind of work, dumb cops, scientific detectives, and radio announcers.
Can you give us some pertinent facts about yourself? Some highlights in your alleged career?
Oh, yes, of course. I joined the Quiz Kids when I was 9 months old. I graduated from Yale at 10. I took postgraduate law at Oxford when I was 12. Having somewhat of a literary streak, I knocked out several little ditties entitled The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Encyclopedia Britannica, and The Chambermaid's Easy Guide to Latin.
That will be all. Thank you. And now you, sir. Your full name, please?
Jonathan Crow, 30 on the 4th of July. Special investigator, room 203, opposite the low party you just interviewed. Hobbies are, from left to right, gals. Pet aversions are Oliver Quail. Work, flatfoots, and radio announcers.
What can you tell us about yourself, Mr. Crow?
I'm on the dumb side. I didn't know what college was until I was 5. After matriculating at dear old Harvard, I joined up with General Custer and captured Sitting Bull. Standing up.
Here.
I also invented the cotton gin, the sewing machine, and the non-collapsible uplift. At the ripe old age of 10, having proven a failure, I joined the Foreign Legion, where I was a member of Newt Rockne's famous four horsemen.
Enough! You're mad, stark mad, both of you. ladies and gentlemen, forgive this outburst on my part. For this exhibition of fabrication and insolence you just heard is only a smattering of what the police department has had to contend with since this unholy pair was grounded by the Air Force due to injuries caused by extreme recklessness. To be nearer the truth, both Oliver Quail and Jonathan Crow were raised in the same orphan's home. Their education is just average. They work only when starvation is on their 5-yard line or when a pretty girl is involved, and are extremely allergic to the truth, especially when dealing with the fair sex and the long-suffering San Francisco police.
Speaking of the naked truth, brother, where and with whom were you last night at 11:30 p.m., and how do you explain that lipstick under your left ear?
Why, I was...
Did you write your mother last, my noble friend?
I wrote...
And how and where did you get that pound of butter?
Why didn't you tell the income tax collectors that $2,000 gift to charity was a dame named Myrtle?
Pay no attention to them, ladies and gentlemen. Our story really begins with...
Johnny, return the guy's bridge.
I will if you return these toupees.
It's a deal. Hey, chump, this will teach you not to talk out of turn. Goodbye now.
Well, of all the... As I started to say, ladies and gentlemen, the crow and the quail are only part of our mystery story entitled The Corpse Declares a Dividend. The story itself takes place in the little seaside village of Montrose Cove. Montrose Cove has a weekly gazette, circulation 2300, one hotel, one movie theater, one gas station, and to be truthful, one purpose, and that is to be left alone. But before I allow myself to ramble on, let me tell you and turn you over to one of the town's more substantial inhabitants who can tell you more about it than I can.
Montrose Cove, California, in the year 1899, triplets were born to the wife of one Michael F. Gilhooly, an itinerant tinsmith. Nothing exciting has happened to the town since then, but tonight, all that will be changed. Tonight, an event is about to occur that will affect the mores and temples of Montrose Cove. An event so shocking, it will more than atone for those 47 uneventful years. For even at this moment, 10:01 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, a murder has just been committed. But the simple residents of Montrose Cove are unaware that this night is different from 1,000 other nights. Indeed, most of them are in bed, sound asleep, with the exception of a few night hawks, members of the younger set who are just emerging from the last show at the Bijou Theater. And now the hands of the big clock in the courthouse move slowly toward midnight. At half a minute past 12, they will seem to hesitate, giving the good citizens of the town one last chance to contemplate the past few hours, so that afterward they will be able to look back and remember just how it felt to be living in the midst of such a town on such a night. Then, with a sudden jerk, the hands of the clock will meet. And as they meet, the night on which the history of Montrose Coles received a spectacular jolt will disappear into limbo with no one the wiser. For as yet, not a soul is aware that in the old Montrose mansion on the outskirts of town, the body of Judd Montrose, son of the town's founder, lies sprawled across the carved walnut desk in his study. But wait! There must be one who knows the murderer. And how do I know? You see, just about 60 seconds ago, I was murdered.
Blah, blah, blah. There goes that mechanical mulligan. Grab the teletype, McCluskey. Got it?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, what?
It says here, be on the lookout for Red Willie Montrose, alias Monty Rose, recently released from San Quentin. Wanted in connection with the murder of his uncle, Judd Montrose.
Ah. Well, how do you like that, Sergeant Leroy? Why, Red Willie never carried a rod in his whole life.
Ah, Willie's strictly a Pete man. One of the best safe crackers in the business. Very well regarded.
Yes. He always figured that a safe was the best place for somebody else to keep their money.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, what I was going to say is that all of us got at least one murder in our system if given the proper incentive. Brother Willie had it.
Yes.
A three-time loser wouldn't hesitate to use a gat.
Oh, sure, sure, Sarge. But I still think the guy that bumped Montrose was one of his cousins, the guy they call Titus.
Then again, it could be another case of touché.
Touché?
Yeah, touché la femme. You know, that's Spanish for find the woman.
Oh, Spanish, is it?
Yeah. Maybe his knee smoked him, or some baby walked out on him when you and I were young, McCluskey. Of course. Uh-oh, we got visiting. Hey, Damon Red's not a bad looker.
Yeah? But look at the build on the guy. Why, he's bigger than Joe Lewis.
Never did like mugs but wear dark glasses. Must be one of those Hollywood characters looking for his cocker spaniel or something. Can I do something for you?
Yes, you can, Sergeant. Just a moment.
Oh, darling, please, don't be too long.
My sweet, neither iron chains nor bars can keep me away from you for more than one precious moment.
Oh, darling.
I beg your pardon. Could you tell me if Mr. Jonathan Crowe is being held here?
Did you say held? You call being tossed into the clink with a flock of stumblebums and drunks being held?
And that he is, brother, that he is. Can't understand what's gotten into poor Jonathan. Oh, he's become an enigma.
Not only that, he's also charged with disturbing the peace, fighting with a cab driver, and resisting an officer of the law.
Oh, I can understand your feelings, Sergeant. But you see, Jonathan Crowe comes from one of the finest families in Boston. You know, it would kill his poor old mother, who sits by the window night after night, waiting. You have a mother, Sergeant.
I got a heart of stone. Bail is $50.
I'll be very happy to pay it.
Well, you his lawyer?
Oh, no, just a friend.
Oh, yeah. Sure making history, mister. They'll give you odds on Market Street that the guy never had a friend. McCluskey.
Yes, sir.
Get that goofy gumshoe up here. Tell him that Santa Claus has arrived.
Judd Montrose speaking. If you will recall, just about 3 minutes ago, I was murdered. At this time, I wish I could take you to Montrose Cove to meet some of my precious relatives whom I haven't seen in years. Their presence, I might add, was undoubtedly inspired by the message to them from my attorney, who intimated that there might be an advance reading of my will. You see, there is a slight sum of $1.5 million to be distributed among four of them. I imagine their love for me on this day must have been very profound. I can see them in my study. Sherry Mason, my niece. Blonde, young, beautiful. My other niece, Marcia, now Mrs. Hubert Grosvenor. Marcia is several years Sherry's senior. Also beautiful, in a different way. Hubert Grosvenor, jealous, humorless. A government investigation hangs heavy over his graying locks. His tan face is lined with worry. So different from Cousin Tanner Holt, who honestly believes that anyone who works for a living is a rank failure. And Cousin Titus, the same old tight-fisted money bag. I honestly believe at this moment old Titus has more money hoarded than I've ever possessed. Perhaps if he had always known that, he wouldn't have gone through life hating me so for that deal that I put over on him many years ago. And last of all, Enos Falter, my eldest friend and executor of my estate, moon-faced, angelic Enos, puffing away on his ancient meerschaum and daydreaming, no doubt, of the speckled beauty dancing on the waters down by the point. But hold on. Are you beginning to feel sorry for me? You are. Oh, I can feel it. Well, don't. Believe me, I was no angel. May never get to be one. Besides, I'm getting as big a kick out of this as you are.
Keep a silence,
there may be a parking.
Ah, blow it out of your ears. We don't have to listen.
Man, turn off and boogie-woogie.
Yeah, you deadbeat to wind up in solitary if you don't shut up.
Hey, wait a minute, Redman. What is this, a hot common contest? Lay off the racket.
That's what I've been telling them, McCluskey, but they'd rather take their orders from the crow over there. He's the ringleader.
Guilty, Your Honor. Let's you and me fight.
All right, wise guy, all right. Get your coat on. The all-time chump of the universe has just put up your bail.
Huh? Hey, look, Irish, you wouldn't kid me, would you, after all I've been through?
With your luck, I'd trade nothing but long shots. Come on, come on.
Irish, never let it be said that Jonathan Crowe was ever ungrateful to one who brought glad tidings. Let me be the first to inform you that a hot foot I administered 5 seconds ago is about fixing to materialize.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure, sure. Big-hearted Johnny Crowe, yes, the policeman's friend, I know. What was it you would... Oh!
About time you two got here. What are you limping for, McCluskey?
Well, it's me rheumatism, Sarge, so help me if his...
All right, Crow, here's your watch and your empty wallet. Sign for
them. Oh, thanks. Jonathan Crow, special investigator. Mm. Had to get that in.
Yeah. And the next time you're brought in here...
Honest, Sarge, there won't be any next time. Who do I thank for this base on balls?
That gentleman by the window with his back towards you. He's talking to that girl.
Oh, I don't know why you did this, friend, but I'd sure like to thank you.
Oh, not at all.
Oh. Holy smoke.
Hey, you lunatic, what's the big idea? Grab him, McCluskey.
Yeah, no, wait a minute here. Oh,
hey,
holy
cat.
He's not only bigger than Joe Ross, he hits twice as hard. Let's both of them grab him, Sarge.
Hey, you took a poke at me, mister. For that, you'll be sorry.
Now, take it easy, gents. There must be an easier way to do this. Watch out! Oh, now I'm sure of it. All cops have big feet. They go by best sunglasses.
Well, I'll be it. It's Oliver Quail.
I might have known it. What did I ever do to deserve to have both you birds here at the same time?
Why should I be punished like this?
But, Sergeant...
You're supposed to be private dicks, but even a private dick should have some sense of ethics and propriety. But not you guys, no. You make your own rules, and you want the rest of the world to abide by them. McCluskey.
Yep.
Give me a vitamin B1.
Oh, now, everything you say is partly true, Sergeant, especially about the Crow. If I had my way, I'd slug him once a day and twice on Sundays and holidays. But to say that I also took a poke at you, Sergeant, why, that's nothing more than hallucinate. Mm-hmm. Now, look, Sarge, how would you feel if that red-headed ape wrote to your best girl in Oakland that you were a married man and the father of six children? One of the kids had two heads.
Holy cat.
As Virgil so aptly put it, amati hixtra jotibus mortibus, which freely translated means slander kills love more quickly than perfidy.
Look, I still say you took a poke at me, and that's a 2-year offense.
Oh, no, you're wrong. You're dead wrong, Sarge. Why, I respect
McCluskey,
the uniform.
Yes, lock him up. Don't let him communicate with nobody.
Yes,
good heavens, what'll I do now?
Don't do anything, baby, until you hear from me.
Get going, Quail.
Now, Sergeant, you're going to regret this. You'll despise yourself in the morning, you...
Oh, I'm amazed that such brawls can take place in a police station.
Miss, anything can happen when them two birds get together. You got a complaint?
Well, why don't you do something about that man on the floor? He sounds like he's in terrible pain.
I'll take care of him. All right, Cole, snap out of it.
Come on,
you're cluttering up the place.
Where's the atom bomb, man? Did they fire any more bodies?
You wasn't hit by no bomb, Johnny. Your pal Oliver Quail bounced a 1-2 off of that glass jaw of yours.
I'll be a sad sack. Where is the no blood?
Quail's taking your place in the bullpen.
You can't do that. Let me at him. I'll tear him apart. I'll break every bone in his body.
Get out of here before I lock you both up. I'm keeping him here incommunicado till tomorrow morning. Oh, you like the idea of your friend and benefactor spending the night in the sneezer.
No, I was thinking of a gag a guy told me in Tijuana. I just got it. Hey, where's my hat? I didn't see you come in here with no hat.
Yeah, since when do you wear a hat?
Well, I had one when I came in. Oh, it's back in the cell. I'm going back there and get it.
All right, McCluskey. Take him back to the bullpen and be sure you don't start another ruckus with the Quail. Keep your eye on both of them.
Yes, sir. Come on.
Had to be you. Wandered around, finally found somebody who.
Well, genius, how does it feel to be so smart?
You'll never know. What are you doing here, you red-headed mongoose?
Oh, brother. Oh, do you look natural. The sergeant tells me he's going to keep you on ice for another 24 hours.
So what? It was worth it. Now, maybe you'll stay out of my personal affairs.
How about that? Why, Mabel couldn't live without me if you started making love to her in Latin.
Ah, yes, Mabel. Qui vincus famina delimutabus est. Or in other words, who can fathom a woman's deepest...
Never mind that mumbo-jumbo. You just stay away from my days from now on.
We interrupt this musical program to bring you an important news flash. The most sensational news of the moment is a new development in the mysterious murder of Judd Montrose, which for more than 24 hours has baffled local and county authorities at the little seaside village of Montrose Cove. Today, the will of the eccentric Montrose was filed for probate and disclosed that the wealthy recluse had anticipated his own murder. The will provides that in case of his unnatural death, the sum of $50,000 is to be paid as a reward to the person who solves the crime. The strange will also provides that no beneficiary of the estate is to receive 1 cent until the murder is brought to justice. The executors of the estate are furthermore instructed to pay all expenses necessary to prosecute the search for Montrose's assassin. Further development will be...
Wait.
Turn off that radio!
Oh, no. No. This is too good to be true. A $50,000 sweepstake is fixing to roll and the Quail can't get out of his cage. Ollie, I forgive you for everything. When I come back with that dough, I'll let you slug me again.
Johnny, now why would I want to do that? You're my pal. I love you.
Come on, what are we waiting for? Let's get out of here.
Sure. Let's. What do you mean, let's? You're a jailbird, Quail, my fine feathered friend.
Johnny, don't say that.
Hey, Johnny. Remember when we were little kids?
Yeah.
You remember how we used to swipe lobsters from the Maggio's down by the waterfront? Yeah, and then that time you cut a big hole in the seat of my pants, and I didn't know it until Margie saw.
Hey, do you remember that platinum blonde from Monterey?
Yeah, the one I was nuts about, the one you took away from me.
Johnny, I promise I'll never look at another dame.
Johnny, you gotta get me out of here.
Get yourself up with some of that Latin jive. There's 50 G's in it.
Now, Johnny, you're a chump. We don't go into this together. Your muscle and my brains, why, we'll knock this murder over in 12 hours. It's open and shut.
You're not kidding, Papa. I'm in the open and you're shut, which gives Johnny a 24-hour head start. Sleep well, my delinquent chum.
Johnny, don't do this to me. Johnny!
Hey, Sarge. What happened to the doll that was here a couple of minutes ago? Red hot and beautiful.
She blew. Why don't you hire a detective to find her?
An excellent suggestion, Sergeant Leroy. I'll take the case. Isn't the lady in red? I wondered what happened to you.
Well, I thought I'd better talk with you outside.
Well, right now I'm in an awful hurry. I've got to pick up a few things in my office.
Well, why don't you get in? We can talk on the way.
Okay. Ooh, that perfume of yours does things to me.
Please, be serious for a moment. I'm in terrible trouble. I've had a premonition of imminent danger. As though a shadow were engulfing me. Day after day, I feel it growing nearer and nearer. I don't think I can stand it much longer. And just yesterday, I found myself doing the strangest thing.
Never mind about yesterday. What are you doing tonight?
Oh, nothing sacred, is there?
Oh, I'm sorry, baby, miss. I don't know what I could have been thinking about. Oh, hey, driver! Pull up in front of that old wreck building there, the one that hasn't been painted in years. Look, sweetheart, this is where I get out.
Aren't you going to help me?
Oh, I'm in a terrible rush now. I'll tell you what. You take care of the cab and then wait for me in my jalopy. It's in a lot right behind this building. In the meantime, I'll run upstairs and pack my grip.
Oh, please hurry, dear. I'm much too nervous to be alone.
If it ain't the Crow. What are you doing in Oliver Quayle's office? You're getting so punchy you don't even know your own corner. Your foxhole is just across the hall as the crow flies. Remember?
You're right, Sappho, my ugling duckling. I should have known the difference just by the aroma. Cleo, my darling, my sweet, my precious. How is the most competent secretary this side of paradise?
All of which you pay me the startling salary of $22.50 a week. And which I intend to collect before you're 2 minutes older. Now, yesterday was payday, and where were you?
That, darling, is a long but exciting story, which I shall recount some rainy afternoon.
Oh, now, never mind the bedtime story. Just sign this paycheck.
Yeah, I'm glad you got my 45 out of hock.
I don't know what you're up to, but if you're leaving this asylum before you pay this check, it's for 2 weeks back salary.
Look, honey, I got a check for the balance of my account. I think there's about 47 bucks left. I'll pay you your salary when I get back. Right now, I'm headed for Montrose Cove and 50,000 smackaroos.
What are you selling, hot nylons? I'm not letting you stall me another minute. Now, you put your John Hancock on this paycheck or else.
Now, look, lover.
I'm not listening, Johnny Crow. I'll holler for the cops, so help me.
Sugar, push, you would.
I would. Just get that John Hancock on the dotted line.
Okay, hand me the pen. There. I'll see you in a couple of days. Oh, Cleo, take care of these gentlemen.
That won't be necessary. We want you, Crow.
Well, what?
On suspicion of murder.
I'll keep your secret.
Don't give us any trouble.
Well, you guys nuts. Now blow. I've got things to do and places to go.
Hey, stop him! Johnny! Don't let him get away!
Cleo! Cleo! Yeah, are you okay? Hey, what happened? What was all that ruckus about?
Oh, they just picked Johnny Crow up for murder.
Oh, that. Well, what are you grinning about?
Well, believe it or not, that big baboon actually came through with 2 weeks back salary. Oh, I really hated to do it to the poor guy because I know he needed the money.
But then again, I couldn't get that big red hat out of my mind. Say, look, kid, do you have enough dough on hand to cash this check for me?
Yeah, I think so. Now, let's have it. Uh-oh. Honey, you sure got a valuable hunk of property here.
Well, what do you mean?
The guy that signed this check also signed the Declaration of Independence.
Ye gods! John Hancock!
Did you ever hear of such goings-on? John Hancock. How I could have used the crow and the quail in one of my enterprises.
That will be enough out of you, my ghostly friend. I warned you about that pair, ladies and gentlemen. Now, as the curtain rings down on the first episode of our mystery, we find Oliver Quail languishing in jail, and Jonathan Crow, a fugitive, wanted on suspicion of murder. Will they get the $50,000 reward for solving the Judd Montrose case? Oh, it is to laugh. Why, if either of them even came close, I'd be willing to parade up and down Market Street in red flannel underwear.
What size do you wear?
52. Who said that?